His name was Francis Espagnol, and he was the leader of the Grand Portage Anishinaabe in the early to mid-1800s. He was described as a tall and handsome man with the air of a prince. Little is known about this Anishinaabe leader named Espagnol, and what is recorded is primarily from fur trade records. During the 1820s, a trader wrote that there is one principal chief to whom the others in great measure look up to. The only name he goes by, even with the Indians, is Espagnol. Tim Cochran has written a book on the North Shore fur trade and the Anishinaabe people of Grand Portage and Grand Marais. He shares some of what he learned about Espagnol, who was born around 1783 and became tribal chief in the 1820s.
Espagnol was a pretty distinguished individual. He lived through some amazing changes. He was born the year of the worst epidemic on the North Shore, the smallpox epidemic, in which 30-40% of the Ojibwa along the border country died. So he was born into great trauma. We're not quite sure of Espagnol's father, who he was. Some people believe that he was called the Spaniard because his father was a Spaniard or knew Spanish. It's more likely that his father was not an Ojibwa, was probably a fur trader, probably French. The story in Grand Portage among some of the speakers is that it was simply a matter that the traders couldn't pronounce his Ojibwa name, so they reverted to something close to it. Instead of Aishpaning, it came into Espagnol. And that's also quite possible. And Espagnol, if he was half trader and half Ojibwa, genetics doesn't make much difference here. He was an Ojibwa person culturally and a leader of the Ojibwa band. And as leaders were in the day, he was good at most things. And he was a particularly good trapper and trader. He was tall, he was strong, and one of his real gifts was he was a great speaker. And that was a prized attribute for Anishinaabe, is that their leaders could represent and speak well in a public forum. Espagnol's mother was a Grand Portage Ojibwa, and the family seems to have a propensity to literally be down in the Grand Marais area a lot. And many times the maple sugar groves were identified or were owned in some sense by the Ojibwa women. So it's probably that his mother had a sugar sap collecting and syrup making operation above the town of Grand Marais, and then late fall in lake trout fishing. He's mostly between Grand Portage and Grand Marais. His territory, however, he would be going all the way up to Fort William, way west Arrow Lake, way beyond Rose Lake, and then down as far as Grand Marais. On occasion, he would be going to Duluth, or what was called Fond du Lac at the time. On occasion, he would go on sort of diplomatic missions, if you will, or there's a couple of times where he is investigating religion, and he ends up in Sault Ste. Marie trying to figure out what Methodists are all about, and then he comes back, and essentially the Roman Catholics show up, and he's, in a matter of 6 months, he's baptized in both faiths. But that was actually not uncommon either for Ojibwa leaders at the time, because they're trying to figure out where the power, what this religion of Christianity, what it does, what it can do for you. So they're participating as much as they can. And they, again, I think in most instances, are hoping to bring back whatever they can to the benefit of the band at the time.
In the 1820s, the Hudson Bay Company had a trading post in Thunder Bay. To compete with the British-owned Hudson Bay Company, the American Fur Company built a small trading post in Grand Marais. Maintaining a business relationship with the two companies presented a new challenge for Espagnol and his band. Tribal leader Espanol shrewdly and creatively maintained trading alliances with both companies to get competitive prices and preferential treatment for the Anishinaabe along the North Shore.
Espanol was obviously a courageous individual. He had fought in the 1812 war. You know, he fought for the British, so he was a war veteran. And about a dozen years later, when the Americans come to Grand Marais, he has to start to negotiate with his former enemies. So this is a tough thing to kind of wrap your head around. Is he, as the leader, he can't be prejudiced towards the Americans in the sense of not wanting them there. He has to look out for the whole of the welfare of his band. So if the Americans gave him a trading advantage, you know, then that's a good thing. If it meant somehow things would shift out of their favor, then he might try a different strategy. But what he was really working on was to play the Americans against the British, or play the American Fur Company against the Hudson Bay Company. And this is economics that we would all understand. If there is competition between two companies, guess what happens? Prices go down. So he's in this fragile situation where he needs to have both companies stay and compete, and that works out best for his folks. And he has a number of ingenious ways that he makes this work. The primary one is the British had been here longer through the Hudson Bay Company, so he has the older men of his band who know the Hudson Bay Company traders continue to trade with the Hudson Bay Company traders, while he has the younger men who don't know and don't have the connection with the Hudson Bay Company trade with the Americans. And that's the way he can keep both groups in play. One of my favorite things that he did personally was he would essentially hide in the great interior from here. The territory would go almost all the way to what we would say almost is the Ely area now. And when he was unsure of what prices were, he would sometimes be hard to find. And there were some curious moments where the Americans would be chasing after him, or the Hudson Bay Company, they'd be chasing after him with delicacies like fresh coffee and chocolate. He uses his role to find the best trading terms for his people. And it's pretty ingenious a number of the ways that he did that. Most of the information about Espanol is from fur trade records. Also, on occasion, Father Barraca's baptismal record, that kind of thing. So Espanol is kind of a shadowy character. He more or less disappears, or at least his death is not recounted in any documents. But I have him right up into the 1841, and then he's disappeared by 1842.
More information about tribal leader Espanol can be found in Tim Cochran's book, Gitche Bidibig, Grand Marais, Early Accounts of the Anishinaabe and the North Shore Fur Trade. This feature was produced by Martha Marnaka and is a production of WTIP North Shore Community Radio and the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.